Good morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. The national birth rate reached an all-time low in the United States in 2017. Our next guest calls this a birth strike. We're joined now by author Jenny Brown. She is a national women's liberation organizer and former editor of Labor Notes. Her new book, Birth Strike, The Hidden Fight Over Women's Work, explores the declining birth rates as a strike by women to improve their labor conditions. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
So let's start at the beginning. Where does the phrase birth strike come from?
It originally comes from France in the 1890s, but it comes to the United States primarily as a term that Emma Goldman used when she toured around the country in around 1913, talking about birth control, which of course was illegal at the time. And she called that her birth strike lecture, meaning that women were seizing control of the means of reproduction by using birth control.
And why is this concept useful in terms of thinking about how women are organizing our struggles around work, around pay, around unseen labor, et cetera?
Well, right now, I think for folks who want to have kids but can't figure out how to make it work, either by not having childcare or not having health care or not having any paid leave or just the expense of children, I think they're generally blaming themselves when it really looks impossible. And so what we're trying to do is show that the birth rate is a bunch of people making individual decisions, but they're making them under these constraints. And if they saw the system as benefiting from having kids, which it does, I mean, the entire system is dependent on parents having kids, and they saw the system as one which is relying on primarily women's unpaid labor in order to function, they would have a different view and maybe stop blaming themselves or each other and start thinking about how the system can be changed. And so we try to point to countries that do a much better job of this and aren't coercing births. In fact, they're encouraging them by providing humane alternatives like childcare and healthcare rather than rationing and preventing people from getting those things.
You did it a little bit, but let's really sort of expand upon what it means in the 21st century for a woman in the United States to decide that she's going to have a baby versus making that decision in, let's say, Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, we do consciousness raising where we compare our experiences and then try to draw conclusions about who's benefiting. And one of our consciousness raising meetings in 2015 in Florida, we went around the room and we discovered that many members of our group had decided to stop at one child just because it was just too difficult. And the factors were health care, lack of child care, lack of after school programs, overwork, exhaustion, just the idea of doing 8 hours a day of work and then coming home and doing 8 hours of care work. It just looked unmanageable. And then for those of us who didn't have kids, we were facing things like health insurance that wouldn't cover the birth, unless you bought a rider, unreliable childcare. Right. I mean, the situations were just really difficult. This society is benefiting from basically us doing all this work on the cheap, and it's not providing any of the things that we need to support ourselves when we're doing this very necessary job of raising future generations and the next generation, which is vital to our economy, our society, and to all of us.
And so then let's do the compare and contrast. So like Sweden, and you say this, is the leader for, quote, generous family policies. What does that look like?
Well, it looks like 16 months off paid for both parents. There's an amount of time that the fathers have to take or they lose it, a use it or lose it sort of daddy quota. But basically they can split the time anyway, except the father needs to take some of it. And child care that is basically free. So you have preschool, you have, of course, guaranteed health care, and then you have much shorter work hours because you have guaranteed 6 weeks of vacation and a lot of sick leave that's guaranteed by law. It doesn't depend on your employer. So it's just really quite a different picture.
Across demographics and race, are women in the United States on a birth strike? Or how does race impact this conversation?
All groups are having fewer kids. Black women and Latinas started a little higher in the birth rate, but it's declining at the same rate across ethnic groups. And so at this point, it's below replacement for everybody. Replacement is 2.1 children per woman on average in the society. And, you know, the way that the U.S. has generally dealt with lower birth rates is by encouraging immigration. And, you know, this is historically how the U.S. was a settler country and still is a settler country in many ways. So that's been the method. But the problem is that now many countries like Mexico have considerably lower birth rates than they did. So sending countries are now having lower birth rates. And that has sort of made some of these pro-immigration Republicans like Jeb Bush very nervous, because it means the source of their labor power for employers and everything is going to dry up if they don't figure out something. So we think that's why some of the politics has gotten really intense around abortion and birth control. And it's a real about face, because feminists have the 1960s period burned in our minds, because that was a period that was characterized by really horrible reproductive coercion in the form of forced sterilization against women on welfare, and in particular Black women, but also Mexican Americans and Native women, and also folks in Puerto Rico. You know, this was a period where the U.S. ruling class was freaking out not about underpopulation, but overpopulation. Mm-hmm. And so that period is very clear in our minds. And I think for feminists, we sometimes think that that is the overarching policy still. But if you look at it, like, there's, you know, there's one clinic left in Mississippi, and it's operating under extreme legal and pressures and threats. You know, the idea that they want fewer of us is kind of, it's starting to look pretty threadbare.
In what rooms are these conversations potentially happening? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to imagine this room full of men, most likely, having conversations about abortion policy rooted in this analysis.
There's a group of reformicons called the Young Guns Network, which put out, you know, a very long, several chapter policy statement on, and part of it is around the low birth rate. And one of the things that they're very concerned about is the aging population, which means that the society is going to need to dedicate more money to retirees, and fewer people are going to actually be working age. This makes employers nervous, because it means that they can't steal our pensions quite so vigorously as they had before. They might actually have to cough up some money. I mean, they say Social Security is in trouble as a result, but that is basically just because they've been, you know, lying about Social Security for so many years. But it does mean that they have population that's fewer young people ready to work, and more older people who have finished their work lives. And so they're very explicit that they want to raise the retirement age. They want to encourage immigration, but the only kind of immigration they really want is guest worker programs, where workers are completely at the mercy of their employer and can be deported as soon as they displease their employer in any way. So they're very much looking at ways to make up for the deficit in births by having a workforce that's completely compliant, and guest worker programs are really the way that they have been looking at that. And they explicitly talk about not wanting to get rid of family reunification, and the reason that they give is that family reunification for immigrants who might be able to bring members of their family. They want to get rid of that because these are people who might require health care or child care or education, and they very much want to outsource those functions to other countries and not provide those things here, because it costs money that they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay taxes into. One of the things they're very concerned about is the example of Japan, where the birth rate has gone down and it's ahead of ours and going down. And Japan has about a decade of economic stagnation, which is partly blamed on the low birth rate. And they're very worried about that here. You know, capitalism relies on a growing economy, and part of the growth of the economy has always been the growth in population. But at this point, that's no longer going to be an engine of growth. And so they're very worried about what that's going to mean for women and for parents. You know, it's not a problem that the population is diminishing. It, you know, it's fine. It's only a concern if you are a capitalist or an employer trying to make sure that you have growth in your markets and a ready-to-work workforce and all of these things, and an age ratio that makes it easy to push taking care of old people back into the family. Those are the concerns. They're not concerns for ordinary everyday people, but for them, it is really a concern. And you can see this in all their think tank reports, and sometimes it gets into mainstream publications. People are not having enough kids to satisfy the employing class.
You are listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks in conversation with Jenny Brown, author of Birth Strike, The Hidden Fight Over Women's Work. Listening to you talk, like three new questions popped up into my head. And one, I don't know, a halfway question and a halfway comment. But when you were talking about regular folks not being concerned about declining birth rates, I would say in this growing and burgeoning conversation about climate change and the burden that we are on the earth, that this is actually probably a good thing.
Yeah, many people have talked about that. I mean, I think there is a danger there because there is an imperialist and racist version of the reason there's climate change is that there are too many people, and the too many people are all happen to be brown and live in the third world, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, when in fact the reality is that first world economies are contributing much, much more to climate change. If you look at even the first world economies, you know, and there's a group of women in England who have basically declared a climate birth strike, saying that they're not going to have kids until governments take action on climate change. Mm. Anything that creates pressure to have action on climate change, obviously, is a good thing. But I do think there's sort of a danger there where it makes it look like, oh, well, the problem is too many people, when in fact, the problem is that the fossil fuel industry has captured our governments. And that's how, you know, the way to deal with that in the immediate term is to euthanize, basically nationalize and then euthanize the fossil fuel industry. That's going to have to happen. And so whether we have kids or not, as individuals, that will probably not have the effect that we want. Political pressure in any form is really important. Best thing you can do as an individual to stop climate change is to become a climate change activist, right? Necessarily some individual lifestyle change, including not having kids.
The second thing it made me think about is it would seem then, based on, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that this being a concern to the ruling class and the employing class, that they would want to make conditions for women to have children easier and move in the way of, you know, Sweden or, I mean, even Cuba, like sends, you know, doctors to your house, et cetera. What is the resistance there?
Well, I think basically they want to do it on the cheap. The rich in this country are on a tax strike. They're not paying taxes into the system and they don't want to start. The other thing is that so a lot of these things would cost money, like a national childcare system might actually require Amazon to pay, you know, some taxes, which they apparently are not, and in fact are getting subsidized. But then the other thing is that for working class folks, like one of the pressures against having, say, a national health insurance system is that employers want us to be dependent on them for our health care so that we have, we're continued to pressure to get a job with them, stay on the job longer when we really would like to retire. So they would be giving up a little bit of control too, which they don't want to do. Similarly with paid family leave, you know, 50 countries have 6 months or more paid leave, either maternity leave or family leave. And, we have, you know, by law, we don't have any except a couple of states that have managed to get 8 weeks or so. 6 months of leave, what would that look like for employers? They would actually have to hire somebody. Now, in most cases, those systems, basically, it's a national fund that all employers pay into on a per capita basis. So it's not like a small business wouldn't hire you because they think you're about to have a kid and it would cost them money. But it does cost them control over the workforce. So that's why you hear all these howls whenever we even want, like, you know, 5 days of paid sick leave. You know, the employers say, oh, how could we possibly manage in other countries? You know, you get as much paid sick leave as you need.
Right.
It's a matter of control and money. And I don't want to make it sound like Sweden and France and these countries that have generous policies are, you know, more moral or wonderful. I mean, they tried everything before they tried making it easier to have kids. You know, they tried outlawing abortion. They tried in France, abortion and birth control were outlawed, and they did for kids that were the resulting kids that were then abandoned by working class families who couldn't afford to raise them, as they created foundling wheels so that you could give up your baby to the church to be raised. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of horrific programs that they brought in before they finally decided, you know, once the feminist movement won birth control and abortion, that, oh, God, the only way we're going to be able to get this to happen is if we make having kids easier. And so that they finally settled on that. Our country is still in the coercion phase, as far as we can tell.
Well, I guess I wonder, because, no, those countries aren't, you know, perfect. But America does have its own special brand of capitalism, right? The way that capitalism was birthed in this country looks a little different than it does in other countries. And I'm, you know, particularly that it was rooted in race. I wonder how much of those, I might be reaching here, but the controlling factors of the birth of that system, right? Where you not only controlled your workforce, but you also controlled the family dynamics, the reproductive dynamics, et cetera, of that workforce, and how much of that has trickled down in what we see happening in America today.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could very well be. The slavery system was dependent. I mean, after, you know, when the Haitian Revolution started in 1791, it freaked out the ruling class in the newly formed United States, and they were very worried that the flame of insurrection would come north among enslaved people who would be brought from the Caribbean. So that was a big factor in stopping the importation of slaves. And then that meant that the entire slavery system was on the backs of captured African women to reproduce the system, right? Which leads to all of these horrific reproductive coercion that we see under slavery. And really, that system lasts up through World War II, when with landowners trying to keep people on the land in the South and ultimately failing, but during World War II, they start to mechanize the cotton crop, and that allows them to stop being quite so reliant on black labor in the South. So that's when they start to come in with forced sterilization, so common it was called the Mississippi appendectomy, and in Puerto Rico it was called La Operación, just simply it was so common. And so I think that for that, in that period, that was basically their answer to, you know, when populations get restive. So, you know, the other factor about the United States is that our, and this is certainly related to racial divisions, is that our labor movement has not been as strong and has been, you know, terribly repressed and is legally basically if you try to form a union in a private sector workplace these days, it's almost impossible to do because the law is so against you, and then all of the economic forces are also against you. Employers are extremely powerful and are getting their way in a way that they aren't getting their way in France, or where the labor movement is stronger and has been able to establish itself as a political force and have, for better or for worse, certain political party that represents the interests of labor. We don't really have that here, which is related to the way our political system developed. So I do think that is part of what's going on. But also in Sweden and France, the low birth rate was what caused a lot of these changes. They really did want to, in the 1930s, when the birth rate declined in Sweden, that was the seeds of the Swedish welfare state that we see now. So I do think that as the birth rate declines in the United States, we do have some leverage.
And then, Jenny, finally, if this is a strike, there are demands, and we've touched on them, you know, in your various answers. But if you were to sort of lay out what the demands are of the strike, what are they, and what organizing is happening across the country to push us to where we need to be?
My group, National Women's Liberation, which you can find information out about it at womensliberation.org. We are doing study groups around the birth strike book around the country. We have a study guide available on the website, and there are consciousness raising study groups. So we're also answering questions from our personal experience when we do those study groups. And that's a very powerful way of comparing our experiences and seeing who benefits. So that's the first step. Demands that we've laid out, the big four are national healthcare system, everybody covered for everything, national child care system, paid leave, at least 6 months of paid parental leave. And then we think that this is basically a struggle over our time. And, you know, in the 60s, when the labor movement was strong, there was this idea that one person's wage, the male breadwinner family wage, would cover the whole family. Now, most people didn't have it, but it was the ideal. And for unionized workers, it was a reality in many cases. And that meant that the employer was actually putting in something towards the family care job. In other words, the one wage was covering two workers and their children. And what we've seen now with both partners going out to work, we have seen basically that employers are now getting 80 hours a week where they used to get 40, and the family care job is crammed into the day after work, and then we don't have all these supports. So we think that, you know, there's basically the feminist way to go about it is to have what they call in Europe a social wage, which is all of these things guaranteed, like health care and child care and paid leave and paid vacations and sick leave, all of those guaranteed by law, rather than going back to the family wage, which was sexist and also was a justification for paying women less. But we could also look at it like, they're getting twice as many hours out of every couple. What about we just all work 20 hours a week for the same pay that we're making for 40? That would also be an equivalent version of what we had with the family wage. So we think that there is a fight over time. We need to start fighting for a shorter work week. We're working 10 weeks more per year on average than German workers. So that just sort of boils down kind of what they're getting out of us and the reason it's so hard to raise kids right now.
Jenny Brown, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks.
Jenny Brown is the author of Birth Strike, The Hidden Fight Over Women's Work. She is also a national women's liberation organizer and former editor of Labor Notes. Thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to following your work.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.